Pennsylvania doesn't have a legal definition of what constitutes one person giving consent to a partner to have sex. It can sometimes be the determining factor in whether a sexual assault has occurred. The state is not alone either. Most states don't define consent, and even legal experts say beyond one person saying a definitive no or being incapacitated, there's no clear-cut answer, but it's nuanced in the eyes of the law. There is a campaign in Pennsylvania and other states to define consent. It's the topic of today's Smart Talk. Our guest today, Joyce Short, founder and CEO of the Consent Awareness Network, author of Your Consent, The Key to Conquering Sexual Assault, and two other books on sexual assault. Also joining us is Jennifer Storm, Pennsylvania's former victim advocate and author of several books on sexual assault and addiction. I want to welcome both of you to the program. Jennifer Storm, let me start with you. For a lot of people, this probably could use a clarification. Pennsylvania and most other states don't have a definition of consent. Many people hear that and probably say, what? How can that be? How can it be?
You know, we've never defined it. And a lot of it has fallen to juries to interpret. But in terms of, you know, in most legal aspects, we have definitions, right? And the judge is very methodical about explaining those definitions, breaking those definitions down so that juries fully understand, you know, what it is. They have to find fact in cases. And so absent a definition of something so fundamental as consent, when it can be given, when it can't be given, is really challenging. Now we define sexual assault, we define rape, and we define, you know, all the variations of what would be charged as sexual assault. And some of those help to clarify when consent can be entered and when it can't. But we don't have this basic fundamental definition of consent. And that's, it really came at issue, obviously, during the Bill Cosby trial when the jury asked, how do we define this? And the judge said, use your common sense.
Yeah. Talk about that a little bit, because Cosby, during the deposition in the civil case, said that, Andrea Constand, that when she didn't say no, that he took that as consent. Of course, he had drugged her up so that, she couldn't provide consent. But he took that as consent. So in his mind, now that may have been trying to get himself out of prison, but he was saying that because she didn't say no, it was consent. But the judge says to the jury, use your common sense. Is there any other occasion in a legal case where a judge tells a jury, just use your common sense because we have no definition?
No, never. And especially when you're talking about something as important as informed consent, right? And so let's take it out of the context of sexual assault, which in my opinion, that is like the most extreme context where it should be clearly defined. But let's just say if I want to jump out of an airplane, right? I have to sign a form. If I want to enter into any type of an agreement with someone, I have to sign a consent form. I mean, think of how many times you put your signature on a consent form to basically read the instructions about what you're about to engage in and affirmatively say, yes, I am giving my consent to do this. And so there would be, I mean, imagine in a civil suit with a medical practitioner, the jury being told, well, if you didn't sign any consent forms and the guy cut you in a different place, use your common sense. Like the person was incapacitated. So they were there for surgery A, then obviously it should be assumed that they were okay with surgery B. When that is just defies logic, right? There's a reason that we legally define consent in everything that we do. We don't do it in this area because unfortunately, this is an area that we still don't want to talk about. And by defining it and by making it clear, it makes people accountable in a way that our society is just not yet ready to do.
Joyce Short, founder and CEO of the Consent Awareness Network. I saw you nodding your head vigorously as Jennifer was talking about it. So what do you think?
Well, you know, there's a distinction between giving consent and consent. Consent is a noun. And unless you absolutely understand what that noun means, and actually, I'm going to give you a real quickie on it. It means freely given, knowledgeable, and informed agreement. So that's the noun. Giving consent really has to do with how you convey consent. And until we actually define consent in our laws as freely given, knowledgeable, and informed agreement, then we can say yes, we can sign all the papers in the world, we can provide words and conduct that are indicative of consent, but unless you're actually consenting, freely giving, knowledgeable, and informed agreement, no matter what you say and no matter what you do, you are not consenting. And the other thing I wanted to bring up is Jennifer had said something about that it happens only in sexual assault law. We here in New York have Bill A6540A pending, and it says consent is a freely given, knowledgeable, and informed agreement. And we're applying it in general law because there are 162 mentions of the word consent in New York State's penal law, with not one single definition for consent that applies in any of that. And so we are endeavoring to ensure that in every instance in which you need consent, that you understand that consent is a freely given, knowledgeable, and informed agreement. And we actually have some problems with the legislation that's currently pending, because in that legislation, it says that the words and conduct of the victim determine whether or not they consented. And no, I'm terribly sorry. If someone uses force, fear, fraud, I like to call them the three F words that should never take place in sex. When I talk to schools and universities, I say, I know you all know the F word for sex, but do you know that there are three F words that should never take place in sex? And they're force, fear, and fraud, and one more, incapacity. Okay. Incapacity could be age, it could be that you're mentally, that you don't have the mental capacity to make a determination that an able-minded person would have. It could be that you're drugged, or that you're in the or that you're drunk. So,
Well, tell me about the Consent Awareness Network. How did this come to be? Because one thing is, as I pointed out in the introduction, Pennsylvania is not alone. Obviously, New York is another state, but the majority of states in this country do not have a definition, a legal definition of consent. So tell me a little bit about the Consent Awareness Network.
Okay, you're 100%. In my book, you'll see at the back, there's a chart that tells you what consent is in each and every state. And you'll see that not a single state throughout the country actually defines consent in its laws. The Consent Awareness Network, to answer your question, came about because I personally, as well as many, I would say the vast majority of females in the United, throughout the world, have been sexually assaulted. I was sexually assaulted all three ways that exist in Model Penal Code: by force, by force, by duress, and by deception. And that being the case, way back in 2009, I began lobbying for a definition for consent and created the Consent Awareness Network. So we've actually existed, CAN has actually existed since 2009. And we have lobbied legislators around the country in order to define consent in our laws. In fact, we lobbied with the legislators that recently introduced Bill 930 and 1489 that's been introduced in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And I'm really saddened to see that they introduced this bill, even knowing that it is a copycat of a bill in New York. And in New York, it states exactly the same thing. And it went into effect in 2015. And yet in 2020, when the Weinstein jurors asked for the definition for consent, they got an answer from Judge Burke that was very, very similar to the answer from Judge O'Neill in the Cosby case. Use your common sense. And that's absolutely absurd that a judge provides that sort of non-responsiveness to something as critical as consent in a law in a statute that actually determines whether the accused is guilty or innocent.
I'm going to be talking about that legislation in just a moment. If you're just tuning in, we are talking about Pennsylvania and other states across the country not having a legal definition of consent when it comes to sexual contact. Our guest today, Joyce Short, who is founder and CEO of the Consent Awareness Network and author of three books on sexual assault. Jennifer Storm, Pennsylvania's former victim advocate and author of several books on sexual assault and addiction. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Jennifer, before we get to that legislation, you know, one of the things we have heard for the last few years, that this has been stressed often, is that no means no. So does that mean that the absence of no is not consent?
Well, obviously not, right? So just the being able to affirmatively state no is clearly not giving consent. Where it gets really muddy for some people, and it shouldn't be, is that the absence of a no does not mean yes. You have to be clued into a person's body language. You have to be communicating with that person. And where this gets even further complicated is when intoxicants are introduced, whether it is the individual going out and having a couple drinks and you know, having fun and just kind of doing what any normal person in this country should be legally allowed to do, or whether someone is plied with alcohol and or other substances with the intent to incapacitate them. So this if you don't say no, that means I can narrative is basically what Cosby tried to play out. Andre Constand was completely incapacitated. If you don't have the ability to even communicate because you are blacked out or passed out, that does not infer consent. I mean, it's completely illogical in any other instance to apply that same common sense as we ask our juries to do in any other scenario. It's as if to say, well, I showed up at the skydiving place, but then I fell asleep. So they just threw me out of the plane anyway, even though I never had the opportunity to consent because I was there. So I obviously consented because I didn't wake up and say, no, don't throw me out of the plane. I mean, think about that. It defies any logic.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. We're discussing consent to sexual contact and the definition that doesn't exist in Pennsylvania and across the country. Our guest, Joyce Short, founder and CEO of the Consent Awareness Network, and Jennifer Storm, Pennsylvania's former victim advocate. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Again, before we get into the legislation, just want to talk about no. Joyce Short, a couple questions here. Are there other ways to convey no in the eyes of the law? And is fear of saying no the same as saying no?
What you say, we have to create a paradigm shift. And defining consent in our laws is going to create that paradigm shift. The offender, we're basing whether or not you consent on the wrong thing. We're basing it on what is said and how people act, when in fact it's what the influencer does in order to get you to act that matters. And that's true in any other use of the word consent, except in sexual assault. In other words, if they're using any malicious means to get you to say yes, then you're not consenting no matter what you say. So let's stop focusing on what the victim says. That's blame the victim language. That's a blame the victim concept. When you get into a case of sexual assault, the words and conduct of the victim is not what should be on trial. it's the conduct of the offender, of the, I'm sorry, the conduct of the accused, because until such time as they're found guilty, they're not the offender. But it's the influence that the person used in order to get your words and conduct out there that should be in question, and not your words and conduct. And we need to make that paradigm shift. It's a transformational change. It will take place only when we correctly define consent as freely given, knowledgeable, and informed agreement in our laws. So let's stop the BS about what you say and what you do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
There's a reason that we have exceptions, like when someone is under duress or when they're being defrauded or they're being lied to, right? Oftentimes there'll be times when people will consent to something because what they think they're consenting to is actually completely opposite than what they are consenting to. And this has to apply in sexual violence. But in order for it to apply in sexual violence, we have to understand how the brain works and how trauma impacts the brain. And when you are under duress, when you are being threatened, when you are being lied to, when you are being coerced and peer pressured and manipulated, our body goes into what we call survival mode, and it's either fight, flight, or accommodate. And we don't talk about accommodate that often. We use the word freeze. And freeze is not really the best way to describe that third category, because what actually happens is people will accommodate something unthinkable as a survival tool. And so if somebody accommodates another person's violent actions toward them because they're under duress and they're fearing for their safety and their life, and they agree, right? That can be seen as consent, but it's under duress or distress. And so that's where we really have to be clearly defining this. But it also, that's where the nuances come in, because you've got to be able to prove manipulation, intent, you know, that you were being lied to, that you were being coerced. And that's where it starts getting really complicated.
Joyce, something you just said a few minutes ago, and I don't know if I want to say I want to push back, but I just want to bring up what I know a defense lawyer would bring up. I don't think that most people would argue with you that the victims have been the ones on trial in most sexual assault cases. But from what you described, that the person who is the accused, who is considered, innocent until proven guilty, it seems as though what you're saying is that they have a responsibility to prove then that what they did, that they weren't breaking the law. So does it, that pushback, I guess, is, are you taking the responsibility for proving that the victim somehow invited this onto the perpetrator, who is considered innocent until proven guilty?
Well, the person who absolutely is innocent is the victim. So why in God's name are we putting, why are we dumping all this on the victim to prove what they said and they did, when what they said and they did could be, could be just as Jennifer mentioned, the result of force, fear, fraud, incapacity, a determination of whether or not a crime took place is not whether the victim accommodated or whether the victim actually said yes because somebody was clubbing them over the head with a 2x4. The laws we use them differently in cases of theft, right? In a case of theft, if somebody uses force, fear, fraud, or incapacity, and you can prove that they used it, then they're guilty. Why are we doing something different when it comes to the most crucial part of violating your human rights?
Mm-hmm. Just bringing it up.
It's absolutely essential. There's nothing different about the way we would prove it in a case of sexual assault than in a case of theft.
Just
There's
bring
nothing
it up.
Different about it.
just bringing it up because I'm sure that's what you will hear from a defense attorney as well. So let's talk a little bit about the legislation before we get to our phone calls and emails. Jennifer, what's being proposed here in Pennsylvania to define consent?
So I'm not familiar with the bills that Joyce was talking about. My understanding is that Senator Katie Muth is going to be introducing a bill very soon. She is currently working on the language, looking at what other states have done. There's about 10 other states that have like an affirmative consent law on the books. So she's evaluating and analyzing those and hoping to have a bill come out in the next couple of weeks.
But doesn't that legislation, and I don't know if the New York legislation is like this or not, but it would require a yes, either a verbal yes or some other form of agreeing to sexual contact, Joyce?
The bill in New York specifically states, I know because I wrote it, that consent is a freely given, knowledgeable, and informed agreement. It's very simple. It's very clear. There's no nuance to it. That's what it is. What's interesting is that people keep talking about affirmative consent as if there's such a thing as negative consent. There is none. All consent is affirmative. And the bill that's pending currently says that consent has to be mutual consent. That also is nonsensical because consent is something that happens individually. You have a human right to individually consent. It's not mutual. You don't have to get the other person's permission when you want to revoke your consent. And so we have to straighten out those things in our laws. And I hope that the senator who is working on the consent bill, we've talked to a number of senators, and I hope that she contacts us and so that we can work together. We've tried to do that. We discussed it with Senator Muth, with Representative Thomas, with Senator Santasiero, and many more legislators. And we hope that we can get a unified sense that consent is freely given, knowledgeable, and informed agreement. The Consent Awareness Network is trying to do that in states all around the country and all around the world.
But Joyce, when you say it's freely given, does that mean a verbal yes would be required? I mean, let's face it, this is not something that in the heat of the moment, many people are going to say, okay, can we go further than this? Say yes or no. Body language, you know,
I'm not going to
describe graphically where
we
are.
No, it does not mean that you need to sign something. In fact, even if you sign something, let's look at GDPR, okay, General Data Protection Regulation. Even if you sign their consent form, if somebody used force, fear, or fraud in order to get you to sign it, your signature does not convey consent. When you go in to get your COVID shot, Nuremberg Code covers that. Nuremberg Code says clearly, consent is freely given, knowledgeable, and informed agreement. I'm not making this up, folks. So when you go in for your COVID shot, you have to sign a consent form. If somebody lied to you and gave you and told you that they were giving you an allergy shot, and gave you a consent vaccination instead, even if your name appears on that dotted line, you will not have been consenting. And that's why it's imperative that we take the responsibility for consent and put it on the shoulders of the influencer rather than the influenced, right? We can't blame the influenced for how they were influenced. We have to blame the influencer for how they were influenced. And it doesn't have to be in writing. That's silly. Consent is a meeting of the minds. It's not a specific signed agreement.
Jennifer?
Well, I think this is where we've run into issues, right? Like even in these states where we have had affirmative consent laws, there's been problems. And a lot of that is that you can define anything you want in law. What really needs to happen alongside of those definitions is mandatory education and awareness at every single step of the way. Daycares should be talking about consent. school, kindergarten, one, you know, K through 12, we should be having conversations about consent constantly, because sexual violence lives in silence. And for so many years, the shame and the silence that has prevented parents from having frank conversations with their children, and that has bled into our schools not being able to have frank conversations with their children, leads to these really uncomfortable situations where two people are not communicating at all, and then things happen, and the system is left to kind of figure out who's wrong, who's right, what happened. We could save so many lives, those of potentially accused persons and of obviously the most important victims, if we just made prevention and awareness mandatory. But it can't be a one dip, right? We have a couple laws, like Title IX requires certain things. Our Child Protective Act requires some things. It has to be constant communication, right? You can't just talk about consent once with a kid. It has to be ongoing. It has to be age appropriate. And as they evolve and grow and experience things, the conversation has to do that as well. It's got to be ongoing, because our young people are not being equipped, period.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, Jennifer, because last year created a cartoon that even a six-year-old child can watch, and it defines consent. And we don't do it related to sexual assault. We do it related to going to the park, stealing somebody's brownies, telling somebody that it was a funny movie when it was actually a scary movie, and all the things that children can relate to. And if we define, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg had a wonderful expression, and that was that we change nothing until we change our laws. And once we define consent and codify it by law, then society will understand it, and we will have uniformity in how parents convey consent to their children. So it's vital that we get that definition codified into law. And your listeners can help us by actually supporting A6540A in New York, because once it is passed in New York, it will echo throughout the halls of justice throughout the United States and around the world. And I have a note from one of the legislators that we talked to in Pennsylvania that supports A6540A in New York, and states that once it passes in New York, it will help you get it passed in Pennsylvania.
Jennifer, you're very familiar with the Pennsylvania legislature. I mean, is there bipartisan support for this?
I don't know as I'd go as far as to say bipartisan, no, because I think there's going to be a lot of challenges on the Republican side. And I think you're going to have a couple challenges in the Democratic side, too, the ones that really are opposed, right? And we know what we know about the Pennsylvania legislature is that we have predators in the legislature. So, you know, they certainly don't want to make it easier to bring these cases forward, those that are have their own skeletons in their closet. So I don't know that it's bipartisan. I think this is going to be a heavy lift. The governor has obviously come out in support of it, but again, that's a partisan support, right? I think you need to get to the Lisa Bakers and the folks that are running the Judiciary Committee and have them on board and fully educated about what it is that we're trying to do. And then we can talk about whether we can even get to a place of bipartisan support.
Let's take a phone call.
I'm so glad you mentioned predators in the legislature. Let's look at what happened with Cuomo. Cuomo signed the law. Yes means yes, and still does not understand what the word consent actually means. So I don't know if there's a better way of comprehending the need for defining consent in our laws.
Let's take a phone call from Les in Harrisburg. Les, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hey, we're talking about consent, and I have a granddaughter who will eventually be going to college, and I was thinking, you know, you always hear about the date rape drugs and things like that, and I was thinking of making her some kind of nice-looking thing that she can wear that says, you do not have consent. that could actually be a small business for somebody, you know, wearing decorative jewelry that says you do not have consent when she goes out in the evening or something. And when I heard you talking about legislation, something came to mind. You know, we could, in a legislation, we could have something like, if somebody is wearing a unique color necklace or a bracelet or something, that's an indication that you do that you don't have consent. You know, it's a visual. Not only is it would it be an audio consent, but it'd be a visual consent or not consent if you know, there was some unique necklace or bracelet that automatically meant no consent.
Wes, thank you very much for your call. I think that he's doing that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but the point is that actually no one is giving consent walking around saying, you know, yeah, you have consent to do what you want. So everyone kind of is walking around without a sign or a piece of jewelry. You know, if I don't know. I saw the two of you laughing at that, Jennifer.
Yeah. First of all, I love your heart and your desire to protect your daughter. Like, first of all, thank you. When we get into things like that, though, those will end up causing more issues than they would solving. Because what if the person forgot their necklace that night? Or, you know, also behavior changes. So we have to, that's where the education, especially on college campuses, it can't just be during the Red Zone campaign. It can't just be at freshman orientation, right? It has to be ongoing, constant. There need to be consent conversations happening on college campuses all the time. But just because I walk into a frat party, just because I decide to have a couple drinks, that does not automatically mean I'm game for whatever it is that you may have in mind. There has to be ongoing informed communication. And we have to be educating young people about when that ongoing informed communication can happen and when it can't. And that's when we start getting into intoxication levels. And when it doesn't matter if I'm dancing, laughing, kissing you, I'm on the, you know, I'm letting you spin me around the dance floor. That doesn't mean I'm consenting to other behavior. If I'm kissing and making out with you at a party, that doesn't mean that I automatically want to go upstairs and do other things. But this is where we're failing our young people, because we're not equipping them with the language and the empowerment to have those conversations and to also know when those conversations cannot legally be had.
Joyce?
Just because you have communication still does not necessarily mean that you consented, even if you said yes. Because if the influence that got you to say yes was force, fear, fraud, or incapacity, it doesn't matter that you put on a necklace of a specific color, that you changed your dress. You know, I had to laugh because the question reminded me of the chastity belt. Unfortunately, you know, when you want to lock up your granddaughter in a chastity belt, I think it's probably about as close as you're going to get to putting that concept in action. But I want to make it absolutely clear that, you know, Jessica Mann said yes. Jessica Mann agreed because she was coerced to agree. And Harvey Weinstein is doing 3 years for raping her by coercion. So just because you say yes does not mean that you are consenting. And the offender knows whether they used a malicious influence in order to induce your agreement. You know, there's more than one kind of agreement. There's acquiescence, there's assent, which means agreement on the face of it, and there's consent. And they all differ in their nature. And the kind of agreement that is imperative in sexual contact is freely given, knowledgeable, and informed agreement. In fact, if you want to understand more about the different types of agreement, you could read my book, and I'm not just sitting here proselytizing about it. I'm just trying, or you can watch my TEDx talk, which is free. So,
Jennifer Storm,
you could see it in my TEDx talk.
Jennifer Storm is Pennsylvania's former victim advocate and author of several books on sexual assault and addiction. Joyce Short, founder and CEO of the Consent Awareness Network and author of Your Consent, The Key to Conquering Sexual Assault, and two other books on sexual assault. Thank both of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.